This is The Guardian.
I'm Gabrielle Jackson, coming to you from Gadigal land. And this is the Full Story, Newsroom Edition, where Guardian Australia's editors discuss the news of the week. In a speech on Tuesday, the Australian Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, spoke about her hope to break the endless cycle of violence in the Middle East. The pathway to peace, she suggested, is a two-state solution.
Recognition of each other's right to exist, a Palestinian state alongside the state of Israel.
Her words are the strongest call yet for a pathway beyond the war in Gaza, going further than the Labor government's repeated mentions of Australia's support for a two-state solution.
We know our choices can make a difference in the world, and what happens in the world makes a difference to us. We know the costs of war and the value of peace.
But in response, opposition leader Peter Dutton attacked Wong, calling her reckless and accusing her of alienating Australia's international allies.
For a crass domestic political win, Penny Wong has damaged our relations with our ally Israel.
Today, I'm talking to Editor-in-Chief Lenore Taylor and Head of News Mike Tischer about the changing rhetoric on Palestine. It's Friday, the 12th of April.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Gabs.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
So Penny Wong gave a speech this week which has attracted a lot of attention, Lenore. Why?
Well, she floated the idea of recognising a Palestinian state as part of whatever plan there might be to try to stop this spiral of violence in Gaza.
We need to build the pathway to a peace that is enduring and just. Because the simple truth is that a secure and prosperous future for both Israelis and Palestinians will only come with a two-state solution.
She put it in an international context. She said the international community is considering the questions of Palestinian statehood as a way of trying to sort of devise a way out of this.
It is in Israel's own interests that the Netanyahu government responds to the demands of the international community.
You know, so she's talking about a solution where each state recognises the other's right to exist.
Because Israel's own security depends on a two-state solution, a Palestinian state alongside the state of Israel.
She didn't say the government had made a decision. She didn't give a timetable. She was absolutely clear that Hamas had no place in such a state. So it was a kind of fairly vague proposition, but yeah, it did create a big stir.
Mike, how much of the language or these ideas are new and how much is just maybe a change in tone?
So the bipartisan policy for decades has been that a two-state solution is the ultimate best outcome for a Middle East conflict. That's completely uncontroversial, or should be. The new part was whether Australia, in conjunction with other countries, should think about, consider, maybe some point down the track,
possibly,
should consider whether it would help to recognise Palestine as a state before all the other negotiations that will have to take place inevitably before that state becomes a reality. The border, for the most obvious one, but also all kinds of other issues, status of Jerusalem, refugee policy, et cetera, et cetera, and unending, you know, all the things that have hampered.
Right of return, et cetera, et cetera.
Everything that's hampered a solution up till now. Whether it would help to just make this kind of symbolic, mostly, recognition of Palestine as a state before all that happens, rather than having that as the end point of those negotiations, which, frankly, are not anywhere at the moment. You know, what we used to call the peace process has completely run into the sand. There is absolutely
no
prospect of that happening. So it's kind of an attempt to think about a different way around that and a different way of, I don't know, jump-starting something else, some other kind of process, or seeing the process from a different way. It is something that other countries have done, including some Western countries that Australia would normally see its interests as similar to.
But like who?
The British Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, has floated it in slightly more concrete terms than Penny Wong did, but still it's not something the UK has definitely agreed to yet. But a host of other countries, nearly 140 other countries, have already done so. So it's not something that's come from nowhere.
Mm. So there is a vote on Palestinian statehood coming up in April and all. What's that about?
So there are periodically votes at the UN about Palestinian recognition, and the UN Security Council will consider this again. You know, the idea of full membership. I think that Palestine at the moment has observer status. And normally the US would just scupper that with its veto. Australia's obviously not a member of the Security Council. We would be able to vote in the UN General Assembly. But I think that part of the reaction was concern that this idea is floating around and might maybe find some sort of sucker when those votes come up at the UN. I think that's probably why it got such a very fierce reaction in Australia, even though it was quite a vague and tentative proposition.
Let's talk about that fierce reaction. What have people been saying?
I think fairly predictably, the reaction from most of the organised Jewish groups has been hostile. They say this would be tantamount to rewarding Hamas for its attacks on Israel on the 7th of October. And Peter Dutton gave a speech on Wednesday night in the most kind of colourful and extreme terms.
It is the most reckless act of a foreign minister I've seen in my 22 years in the parliament, that something is rotten in the state of Australia.
Coming down on, in quite extreme terms, in solidarity with Israel, as he would see it. But, yeah, really using language that's quite unusual, I think, certainly when we're talking about foreign affairs.
And what remains is a national moral fog which has made anti-Semitism possible. Foreign Minister Penny Wong made that moral fog denser last night.
What did you make of Dutton's speech, Lenore?
I thought it was quite incendiary, to be honest. I think he was claiming that Penny Wong's speech was motivated by crass domestic political concerns. Now, political concerns, I don't think, are completely absent from any political party's considerations on this matter. But I also don't think that that means they're not also genuinely grappling with the issues to hand. So, for example, Penny Wong was also critical of the Greens' sort of very pro-Palestinian positioning. Now, the Greens, I think, may benefit politically from their pro-Palestinian positioning, but that does not mean it's not also their genuinely held view. Labor has tried very hard to sort of walk a line on this issue, which is in their political interest domestically, but I think also is a genuine belief and concern that it's really important to not import divisions into the Australian polity, if you like. I think both those things are true. And so I think what Peter Dutton was doing was really, he went to the rally outside the Opera House, the pro-Palestinian rally outside the Opera House after October 7, and characterised it as being violent.
Whilst no one was killed during the protests on October 9, thank God, the events at the Sydney Opera House were akin to a Port Arthur moment.
So there were anti-Semitic slurs by a small number of the protesters, but it wasn't violent. And he conflated that then with the pro-Palestinian rallies that have happened and that tens and tens of thousands of people have gone to since then. And by implication, it was almost as if the pro-Palestinian cause is violent. And he also suggested that children are sort of being force-fed sort of anti-Israel and anti-Semitic ideas. I mean, I completely agree with him that the education system should teach children about anti-Semitism and should teach children about the Holocaust. But I think Peter Dutton didn't even countenance the possibility that young people might have looked at what was happening in Gaza and formed their own considered opinion that the humanitarian cost was unbearable and for that reason would be protesting. And then he claimed that police were too scared to crack down on the violence that he said was occurring, which really isn't. Mm. So to my mind, if you took what he was saying as a whole, it really was quite incendiary and quite divisive. It was trying to sort of suggest that there was the pro-Palestinian cause was a violent thing that police were not able to crack down on. I thought it was quite an inflammatory speech.
Yeah, and just on the question of whether recognising Palestine at this point would be, in quotes, rewarding Hamas for their violent attack, I think it's actually quite interesting and useful to disentangle what we mean by recognition of a state from the government of a particular territory. There are lots of governments around the world that we profoundly disagree with, but it doesn't mean we don't recognise them as states. I mean, Russia, for example, has committed a violent attack on to try to change its territorial boundaries, several in fact. Doesn't mean we don't recognise it as a state. We profoundly disagree with the government of China in lots of respects. They've threatened Taiwan with being incorporated back into China. We still recognise China as a state. And Israel itself has also crossed borders that are internationally recognised and tried to arrogate territory on the other side of those borders to itself. It still doesn't mean we don't recognise Israel as a state. It should not mean that we don't recognise Israel as a state. So in the context of Palestine, it doesn't imply that we support Hamas or even the Palestinian Authority as a particular government of that territory.
Well, I mean, didn't Penny Wong say Hamas should have no part of it? Mm. She said it had to be the Palestinian Authority.
It has long been understood that any future Palestinian state cannot be in a position to threaten Israel's security and will need a reformed Palestinian Authority.
But in a way, I think, I mean, that's a reasonable point to make. We don't want Hamas to be in control of Gaza or any other part of Palestine, but it's actually for the Palestinian people, really, to decide who their government is.
Yeah.
From Australia's point of view, do we think this is a state? Our policy is and has been that a two-state solution is ideal. Therefore, we think there should be a Palestinian state. Therefore, to say there actually is a Palestinian state does not seem to be that much of a leap.
The speech came after the IDF killed 7 aid workers, including one Australian aid worker. What's Australia doing about that?
Look, Australia has reacted pretty fiercely, as you would expect, and seems determined to get to the bottom of exactly what happened. And the explanations given so far from the IDF haven't entirely added up on the face of it. And it certainly sort of seemed this week that there was a bit of a disconnect there. So the Foreign Minister Penny Wong and the Defence Minister Richard Marles wrote to their Israeli counterparts demanding more information. Israeli media reports were suggesting that Israel would block foreign access to the IDF officers directly responsible for making the decision to send the missiles to hit the aid convoy, which made it seem like the former Defence Force Chief Mark Binskin was going to struggle to get to the bottom of it, which is what he's been appointed to do. So it felt like there was possibly going to be an issue or a problem between what the government wanted to achieve in getting to the bottom of it and what Israel was going to, you know, let us know. Then our political editor, Karen Middleton, did some digging. And I think she is of the view that behind the scenes, there is an undertaking that we'll get the information that we need, that we're not proposing a sort of shadow investigation of what the Israelis are already doing, but we are asking for access to the evidence that we need, and she thinks there are assurances that we'll get it. So that's all yet to play out, but I think it is something that, you know, could potentially be a pressure point if the Israelis are not sufficiently forthcoming, because I think the government is quite determined to know what the hell happened.
Is it just the Australian aid worker death that has led to this point, or has Labor been gently stepping in this direction?
Well, I think the Australian government, like a lot of governments around the world has been gradually shifting its position, and even not so gradually as the horrors of the war in Gaza have unfolded over the past few months. But certainly the killing of the aid workers has brought it to a new pitch. And I think it's sort of easy to sympathise with Palestinian Australians and others who care about what's going on in Gaza when the death of one person has brought so much publicity and focus on the situation, given how many other terrible things have happened there over the past month, how many people have died, including a large number of other aid workers. However, it has given the Australian government something that is obviously a very legitimate question for them to be involved in directly with Israel, and something that engages the government because it involves the death of an Australian citizen. And I think that is, from their point of view, that has brought the whole conflict into much sharper focus and is probably certainly helping to draw a more forceful reaction to Israel and demands to find out in this particular incident more information. Whether that will be successful, we'll see.
Is public opinion shifting on this domestically, Lenore?
I think it is. We haven't got really sort of comprehensive polling on that, but what you can see does suggest that public opinion has shifted against Israel, if you like, since October 7, as the war has continued to unfold. The most recent Essential poll found that only 18% of people supported Israel's continued military action in Gaza. 20% said Israel should agree to a temporary ceasefire. 37% said Israel should withdraw permanently. And 24% was unsure. We haven't sort of got historic data to compare that with. But, you know, anecdotally, it seems like public opinion is sort of shifting here and around the world against Israel. And I think for Labor, there is a particular concern about what's going on in seats with a fairly high Muslim population. So I think, like as I said earlier, I think it does play into political considerations for many parties, but I don't think we should be so cynical as to think that's the only thing that they're thinking about.
No, definitely not. But I think there's also a question for Peter Dutton's response here, because those same seats, particularly in Western Sydney or in the outer suburbs of other cities with large Muslim population, are also the ones that his strategy has been built around in other respects, particularly on cost of living and so on, whereas he's been, if not abandoning, at least not focusing on the seats that were lost to the Teals last time. So if his rhetoric is so kind of tending towards extreme pro-Israel rhetoric, let's put it that way, it feels like he's not broadening his appeal in those seats either. So I'm confused about whether, if that is a cynical political strategy, that it's really an effective one. Yes, Labor holds those seats, but it also seems difficult for the coalition to win support in those seats based on its Peter Dutton's response to Penny Wong and their response generally to what's happened in Gaza.
Unless his target is outer suburban mortgage belt seats and regional seats that don't have a high Muslim population.
Yeah, but he's kind of...
he's narrowing the field.
Yeah, exactly. There are some seats where almost 10% of the population is Muslim. Obviously, you can't just take a direct read off that to say that's what their views are on Gaza, but it seems like a dangerously large proportion of the electorate to potentially alienate.
I think the assessment that he's not motivated entirely by political considerations, but also by what he believes holds for the coalition as well.
Yeah, we should give him that credit.
Next, mini-me's, missing vows, and a final farewell.
Hi, I'm Patrick Keneally, National News Editor at Guardian Australia. Guardian Australia's Morning Mail is a quick roundup of the day's top stories, delivered directly to your inbox, bringing you reliable, accurate news from journalists you can trust. And it's free. Sign up at theguardian.com/newsletter or simply search for Guardian Australia newsletters.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, now we come to what we can't get out of our head. Lenore, what was it for you this week?
So I've always been a little bit obsessed with the Parliamentary Pecuniary Interest Register, which is where politicians have to say all the stuff they own and also what gifts they get. And there's this sort of system where if you get gifts over a certain value, you have to declare them. And then if you want to keep them, you have to pay, or else you just surrender them to your department. And I've always liked looking at what they kept and what they surrendered. And I've always wondered what the givers think if they didn't even keep the gift, but just like put it in some dusty room in their department. Anyway, this week we ran a story about Labor MP Julian Hill, who was given a statue of himself from a constituent, which was 56 centimetres high, seated on a 75 centimetre high throne. And he wasn't quite sure how to value it because, well, how would you be? So he said that it was priceless and he did decide to keep it, which I think was exactly the right decision.
I highly encourage readers to go and look at the photo. It's quite something.
His suit is quite shiny.
Yeah, I mean, someone went to a lot of effort to make that.
And the throne is quite big.
Mike, what can't you get out of your head?
So the story I enjoyed most this week by some distance, I think.
I can confirm that he laughed about it all morning in the
yes,
office.
There was a lot of chuckling.
Was one from the UK, which was about a company called, I don't know if you can even say it. It used to be called Standard Life Aberdeen. It's like a fund manager. But in 2021, they changed their name to Aberdeen without the vowels.
Could you spell it, please?
A-B-R-D-N. People made a lot of jokes about it at the time, saying like it was irritable vowel syndrome and various other wags on Twitter, as we used to call them. Anyway, this week, the chief investment officer of Aberdeen said he was very cross about people still continuing to make, quote, childish jokes about the name
it's
change.
Still funny.
He said, I understand that corporate bullying to some extent is part of the game with the press, even though it's a little childish to keep hammering the missing vowels in our name. Would you do that with an individual? How would you look at a person that makes fun of your name day in, day out? It's probably not ethical to do it, but apparently with companies it is different.
Yes, it is different.
Hello, Peter. Yes, it yeah. is different because companies have no central nervous system, cannot feel the sting of the insult.
And Aberdeen is genuinely funny.
And they choose their own names. I yes. want a recording of the call centre. Hi, it's Aberdeen calling.
Maybe we can do that for next week.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Lenore.
Thanks, Gabs.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Gabs. And we should say this may be the last time we can say
yes.
that. Not forever, probably, but your stint as the host of Newsroom Edition is coming to an end.
Because Gabrielle has been promoted to be deputy editor.
It's been such a great pleasure. I've loved hosting this show and talking with you, Mike and Lenore, every week. But I'm sure the listeners will absolutely love Bridie Jabbour, who'll be here next week.
We've liked it too. Thanks, Gabs.
We have. So, yeah.
Bye. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert and Camilla Hannan. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Full Story will be back with you on Monday.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.